if you're wondering, if this is the first time you've ever experienced a Kids Sunday, you need to know I spent 17 years as a youth minister. And these are my favorite kind of sermons to do, because as you look across this stage and as you look at everything that we've done this morning, we have laid an awful lot of dots across the board. And all I'm going to do is just collect the dots that we've laid out and put them together. And before this, before we leave here today, you're going to have learned something that maybe you already knew, but maybe I'm just going to reinforce an idea. Now, this is Kids Sunday, but just so you know, this was not put up for the kids. This is the adult sermon series that we're doing right now. And we are taking a trip to the zoo. And by that, what we're doing is we're taking a look at the various animals that we've got on the wall, and we're making a spiritual application to ourselves by looking in the mirror, taking an examination of our life and deciding, is this something that I struggle with? And so when we look at this board as we have it here, we're finishing up the top part here, which are those four big predators. We started out and we caged up the hyena, which we talked about the idea of divisiveness in the church, and we talked about the fact that, you know what, sometimes the church becomes about what I want. I think I like having the stage here. I can just kind of lean on this the whole time. So the church becomes what I want it to be. Then we talked about the wolf in sheep's clothing, and we talked about, are you authentic, or are you just kind of putting on the clothes and coming to church, and you're really not interested in the Christian life. You're just kind of doing it because it's what we did. And so we talked about how to be an authentic individual. And then last week, remember, we had the highly volatile and the sometimes dangerous and the sometimes very offensive poisonous snake that slithered through the congregation, and we talked about our speech, how our speech can be poisonous, and how sometimes the words that we say, while they say sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me, that's not true. So we need to, the Bible talks a lot about our speech, and so these are the first three creatures that we talked about, and so this morning we have to add a fourth creature to our cage, and it's going to be the lion. So we're going to add the lion to our cage this morning, and we're going to talk a little bit about a topic here. But first, let me tell you about this lion. He is mentioned 117 times in the Bible. That's a lot of lion. The lion is used as a descriptor for God. So when I was talking about a sermon that was going to go with the lion, I really could have done the Lion King. I mean, we could have done that sermon, but believe it or not, it is also used as a descriptor for Satan. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, it says, "Be alert and sober-minded. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." Now, we started off this service singing, well, watching the puppet sing, "The Lion Sleeps Tonight." Did you know that that is actually an African lullaby song? Now, I'm sure they did it without the lion playing the saxophone, and they did it without the electric guitars, and they probably didn't have a piano. It was probably done to maybe a drum beat or something like that. But it's actually a song that they would sing to children in Africa as they were going to sleep, because in Africa, you would be there and you would hear what off in the background? The lion's roaring. And I'm sure that would be kind of disconcerting. You know, we used to have roosters that lived down the road from us, and they always woke us up in the morning. I could not imagine going to sleep with lions roaring in the background and having my mom telling me, "It's okay, honey, they're asleep." Really? I don't think so, unless they have very loud snores. So when we think about a lion, the reason the moms would sing the song is because the lions have some characteristics that, well, the lions, they prowl. And prowling just means that they move around in a restless and stealthy stealthy mode, and they're especially looking for food. They're just kind of always there. Remember what Simba was told? Don't make a sound. Just kind of move around and examine. And, of course, we're used to the lion because the lion makes noise. I mean, that roar is something that is indistinguishable. Did you know that that roar you could hear for 5 miles for the average male lion? That's awesome. That lion could be 5 miles away and you can roar. He can roar and you're still hearing. In this area, we get the big old thunder boomers, and you know they have the idea that the way you know how close the storm is you watch the flash of lightning, and then what do you do? Start counting 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, and then you hear the thunder, and however many Mississippis you have, that's how many miles the storm is away. Just so you're not from that area, now you know how to tell when the storm is coming. So that lion roar, he roars because loud noise, because what he's intending to do is cause fear, because he wants you to understand, you're in my territory. And then he devours. And well, if you've ever been to a fellowship supper, you understand what devour looks like. Just put the chicken out there, and devouring what happens, because it means to consume quickly or destructively. And so these are the characteristics that the Bible lays out for the lion. And the question you have to ask is, why does he do all this? Well, to appreciate the lion, we have to understand the hunt. Now, I am a person that does not sleep a whole bunch, so every now and then around 11 o'clock at night, you will find me watching television, and one of the channels I usually manage to find is Animal Planet. I like to watch animals. And they do this whole big thing on the lions in the Serengeti, and they show you how the lions hunt. They do have a video of this on YouTube. I did not bring it here because it can get kind of gruesome. Just go to YouTube and hunt and put lion hunt zebra and bring it up, and it's an interesting video. But I just want to kind of give you the descriptor of how a lion hunts. Because lions don't hunt as individuals. As a matter of fact, male lions don't hunt at all. Male lions kind of are like the human species. They scavenger. You know, when you're batching it at home, you just kind of eat whatever's left in the fridge or whatever you can manage to find or whatever you... It doesn't have to go together. It just has to be present, and you'll eat it. That's kind of the male lion. It's the female lions that actually go out and do the hunting. They actually do all of the work, and so that is why the females are so important. And so they go out and they hunt, but they don't hunt with just one. Matter of fact, usually when you see lions hunting, they're hunting around three or four at a time. And it's because of their unique hunting style. You see, what happens is that group of lions, they get down into that tall grass, and they sit there just like you see on the screen there, and they just watch the herd. And what they're doing is they're watching the herd, and they're looking for the straggler. They're looking for the one that doesn't stay close. Maybe it's too old to keep up, or too sick, or maybe it's too young to know any better. Who knows what the reason is, but this one just kind of doesn't keep with the herd. And it just watches, and it watches. And then at the right time, the lion that's in charge of the other two gives some kind of a signal. We don't even know what the signal is these days, because it isn't a noise. It gives a signal, and two of the lions go racing toward the herd, causing as much chaos as possible. Now, if you see a lion coming towards your herd, what do you think the herd does? It scatters. It runs. Because guess what? You don't want to be the one eaten. All of a sudden, you turn from a herd to you turn to a bunch of individuals, because everybody's in it for themselves at that point. And so they begin to scatter, and they begin to run. And then the third lion heads toward the straggler, but not to eat it. The third lion, what it's trying to do is cut the path off of this one that wasn't close enough to the herd, cut their path off so that they can't get back to the herd, because eventually that herd is going to reform, and the lions understand they don't stand a chance. So what happens is they cut this one off, and then when they've got it cut off, the two that are attacking the herd will break off and join the third lion that has this one that's now cut off, and then they together will sweep its legs out from underneath it, and then dinner is served. And it's a pretty gruesome sight if you watch it, but here's the deal. Did you know that when they hunt like this, lions are 65% accurate as far as achieving their prey? Lions don't have the energy to chase you. If you've ever been to the zoo and watched them, they're just kind of laying around like a bunch of old lazy creatures. They're not really designed for long hunts. They're designed to go in those short bursts. So they have to be accurate. So when they hunt in a way that's going to assure them that they're going to have a victory. And I find this important because Satan is compared to a lion. And so since I am now understand that he is interested in devouring us, my question is, title of today's sermon, how do you survive a lion attack? And go ahead, let me blow the ending for you. You don't. At least not by yourself. If you think you can do this all by yourself, you have missed something, because I want to tell you something. I have met a great many people that through the years thought they could do this Christian thing all by themselves. I think it's appropriate that we have people from all different churches here this morning, because you know what? We're all one big flock, so to speak. And while I've talked to many people that think you can do this all by yourself, you know what I found out? I don't find very many of them that are successfully doing it. Just ponder this. Jesus thought the church was an important idea. He thought it was so important that he spent 3 years putting together the men that would eventually create the church. And so that's where he spent his time. So if the group, if the herd, if the congregation isn't important, don't you think Jesus just wasted his time? I mean, if there was a better way to do this, don't you think Jesus could have done something else? Why on earth would Jesus take this mode? I mean, even you have to understand that even Jesus understood we're not designed to do this all by ourselves. We are designed to be part of a herd. Even in Genesis chapter 2, verse 8, it said, 18, it says, the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. So this morning, on Lion Sunday, with an entire herd up here together, I want you to talk to you this morning about the idea of disconnected. Now, when we disconnect, we understand what that means. I have cable, and if you disconnect my cable in the middle of the Super Bowl, I will understand what disconnect means. It means I do not get the game anymore. Okay? And so this is an issue that all of us struggle with. Everybody at their point struggles with time, especially when the kids begin to come 18, 19 years old and they head away to college and their faith has to become their own faith. A lot of times this is where people wander. They move away from the herd. And this is a dangerous idea because of the fact that we understand Satan is out there like a prowling lion. So the question becomes, how on earth do I avoid this idea of disconnected? If the only way I can survive the lion attack is to be a part of a vibrant herd, how do I avoid this? And the good news is we don't have to guess. Because guess what? In Hebrews chapter 10, verses 23 and 25, it gives us the instruction book on how to avoid disconnection from your herd, from your body. And this is what it says. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. Now, we like to quote this verse a lot at people that don't come to church, but this isn't about coming to church. This is about connectedness. As a matter of fact, understand, we don't start with a church issue at all. That verse starts out, let us hold unswervingly. There's your red, guys. Unswervingly to the hope we profess. Now, car driving is a topic that's very present in our household these days because we have somebody learning to drive a car. And the first thing you do is you take somebody learning to drive a car, you take them to a parking lot where there's nothing there to hit. Good lesson. Because as you put somebody behind the wheel of a car for the first time, you know what the first thing they notice is? This thing moves a lot easier than I thought it did. I mean, we have power steering in cars nowadays. You just make a little adjustment and that car turns. Here's the second thing they rapidly realize. The car turns where I look. If I look off to the left, then the car goes to the left. If I look off to the right, then a car goes to the right. And if you do this a lot, then the car does this. Okay, you have to understand that idea of swerving is just to put something in a straight line. And so we need to understand where the writer of Hebrews starts off the idea of why we get disconnected. It's not about the church. It's about disconnection begins with a compromised faith. We're looking to the left. We're looking to the right. We're looking at this. We're looking at that. Well, that looks more attractive. Isn't it even Eve back in the Garden of Eden? Where did we start? She looked at the fruit and said, hey, this is kind of cool. That's kind of shiny. I like that. And it begins to compromise our faith because inevitably when we begin to look, then we begin to experiment, and eventually before we know it, our life is doing this. And so we need to understand what eventually begins to happen is what you say you believe is not how you've chosen to live. So we say one thing. We say this is what's important to me. We say that's what I'm going to do. This is who's important. We say Jesus is Lord, but how I live doesn't really reflect it. It doesn't. And so what begins to happen, since how I live is not what I say, then the herd is over here, and I just kind of take one little baby step away from it. I mean, I just want to go out and live a little free. You know, sow some wild oats is words that we used to use. I just want to move a little bit away just so I can have room to grow. And that's okay to grow, but understand this is where it all begins. Because ultimately, your disconnection, your troubles with the herd, it's not about a building. It's not about a group of people. The disconnection begins with the person of Christ. So that you actually begin to step away from your own faith. And I want to tell you something. It's scary. It really is. And as the herd, as the body, we have a responsibility. Because as you continue in that verse, it says, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Now, There are three words I want to focus on in that verse, and the first one is spur. And I got to tell you, I hear that word spur, you know what I think, don't you? Cowboy. You know, you're on the horse and you got, not me, I don't get on horses. But you're on the horse and you got the boots and you got the little things that go on the boots and on the back of the little things are these little spikes. And when you want the horse to move, what do? You take the spikes and you chunk him in the side and you say, giddy up, and he goes forward. That ain't the spur we're talking about. Okay? This isn't the idea that we're supposed to be out chasing people and poking them until the point that they just get tired of us and they giddy up toward God. That's not what we're trying to do here. The idea of spur, as you look at it here, it literally means a thing that prompts or encourages someone, an incentive. Now, I want to tell you something. The average kid that's sitting here today, you could care less about that bulletin. I noticed you're writing. Why? I gave you an incentive. I encouraged you. I spurred you on toward love and good deeds, toward action, because I laid something out there that you're interested in. Man, that's important for us to know, because as we see that person is beginning to swerve in their faith and they're taking their steps away, then we need to put something out there that will encourage them, that will help them to grow without wandering away from the herd. And notice what they say, love and good deeds. It's all about actions. We're supposed to give them something that will connect them to the body, because the reality is if people are going to be connected and care, we have to give them a reason to. This idea that we're just going to put it out here and you're going to take what we're going to ever want to serve you and that's how you're going to have to deal with it, that isn't the way this works. We, the church, have a responsibility to put something out there that will inspire people to connect, that will encourage them. So what are people interested in? That's a good question. You know, it hasn't changed much. You can go all the way back to the dawn of time and people are still interested in the same three things. They're interested in relationships. I mean, I got to tell you, I came to church. I started coming to church because somebody gave me a piece of bubble gum to come. I'm not kidding you. I rode a church bus, and the only reason I got on that bus, somebody said, you get on this bus to go to church, I'll give you a piece of bubble gum. I'm like, I can do that. I can do that. I can get on the bus for a piece of bubble gum. But, you know, as time went on, the bubble gum wasn't enough, but they replaced the bubble gum with, guess what, I had friends at the church. I had people I connected with, people that I shared life with. And so I began to connect to those people. And then so I started coming for them, and eventually, you know what happened? And I understood what it meant to be a Christian. I accepted Christ myself. And then my connection wasn't with the bubble gum. It wasn't with the people. My connection is now with Christ. And so then I come. So relationships are a big part of it. The other thing is people are looking for a place to study. People are still looking for that. They want to know more about their life. They want to know more about how to live this life. They want to know more about how to go about following Christ. They need a place to go study. They're looking for a place to do ministry. They're looking for a place that they can plug in and connect and do things and serve. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you something. The second warning sign that you've got problems with somebody wandering is they start off with that faith issue. You'll notice that as they're part of a church, they'll start to pack it in. Oh, yeah, I'm just a little burnout, and they'll drop out of this, and they'll drop out of that, and they'll become less and less connected to ministries because, understand, you're watching a disconnection problem happen right in front of you. So it's important that we realize, as a church, these are our responsibilities. We have to have these. If we don't offer these things, then you know what? The herd's just going to wander. And one by one, Satan's going to be watching. He's going to be examining the lives. And as we begin to disconnect, man, he's just waiting for his chance. And he'll run into the herd. He causes all kind of chaos in the church. And the first thing you know, he's cut off another one. And one by one, continues to thin the herd. So how are we supposed to survive a lion attack? Well, here's a good way. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. Now, that word habit is extremely important, because we're not talking about somebody that misses because they're sick. Okay? We're not talking about somebody that has a job and they have to work Sundays and then they just can't. We're talking about somebody that has made a personal choice in their life that there are other things that are more important than coming together. That's a habit. Okay? There really isn't a good explanation. It's a habit. And you see it happen. As a matter of fact, this is usually when churches start to notice, ooh, so-and-so has missed three Sundays in a row. I wonder what's wrong with them. But I want you to see, by the time we get to this, we've got bigger issues. Because I want you to notice the progression. We started with an unsteady faith. We started with the idea that, you know, I just want to take a step back. I just want to move away just a little bit, just enough where I can feel my own way, where I can figure this all out. Then we went on to proceed to an unwilling servant. We stopped doing the love and the good deeds, and we stopped doing ministry, and we began to pull that out, and nobody noticed. But then guess what? I become an unattending member. I've impacted the bottom line of the church. Don't we all take notice at that point? The problem is usually by that point, we've got disconnection. And so we're supposed to get past the idea of giving up the habit of not meeting together. So how do you develop a habit? How many of you have at least one bad habit in your life? Oh, the rest of you need to work on it. You have bad habits. Maybe your bad habit is you bite your fingernails. I used to have a friend, and his bad habit was he would sit there the entire time. He would do this. When you were talking to him all the time, it drove you crazy. Okay, maybe your bad habit is you snore. Okay, do bad habits end just because I want them to end? I mean, I could say tomorrow, I'm not going to bite my fingernails anymore. What's probably still going to happen? You have to bite your fingernails. You understand, maybe whatever your habit is, you have to understand that in order to give up a habit, well, you have to do it in more than just one person. You see, our responsibility is we are encouraging one another. Now, I want you to notice how this works. It does not say that we are just to have the minister or the elders or the staff person or this person or that person or the Sunday school teacher do the encouraging. What does it say? Encourage one another. So that means if I notice there's a struggle going on in your life, then you know what? I'm supposed to go and encourage you with that struggle. If I know there's something that you're working on in your life, I'm supposed to encourage you in that area. But here's the other side of it. If you see something in my life, you're supposed to do the same. You see, that's the way this is designed to work. Because if we're encouraging one another, then as I take my first faith step back, my swerving faith, and I take that one step, then guess what? There's somebody out there that notices that that's not normal for you. Something's changing in your life. Hey, let's talk about this. Let's go have lunch. Let's see what's going on. What can I help you with? You know, it's one of the things, and we have a few of us in this church that we're doing some weight loss. And so it wasn't something that we designed together. We did not get together and say, we're going to start a weight loss program at the church. It's not what we did. We kind of each made our decisions for different reasons. But the thing is that we found encouragement from one another because we can ask each other, how's it going? What's going on? How did you do this week? You know? And although sometimes it's very guilty because you say, you know what, I ate 6 slices of pizza last night during the NFL draft. You know, that isn't doing that good. But I understand somebody cares about me enough to ask those questions. That's an important part of this herd mentality. See, the herd has a responsibility to encourage. Now, this is important because we try. But you need to understand we need to encourage, not attack. Right? You have to be able to tell the difference between the lion and the herd. Okay? You don't want, if you're having issues in your life and you're having swerving faith and you're having disconnected issues and you're trying to, the last thing in the world that you want is somebody to chase you. Have you ever tried to chase an animal before? I've had this experience before. I'm not an animal person, but I have tried to chase a sheep before. Long story I won't share with you this morning, but I learned a very valuable lesson. Sheep run in circles. Stupid sheep. Run away, but I'm out here trying to catch this sheep, and he just run. You know why? The more I chased, the harder he ran because he didn't want to be caught. The funny thing is, the shepherd of that sheep stood still, and when the shepherd made the right call, the sheep broke off his panic and ran right to him because he had a relationship, a sense of trust with that shepherd. And this is what it's talking about. We have to have a sense of trust with one another. We can't just chase people because we didn't see them. We can't just chase people because it makes me feel better. The idea here is to encourage. In fact, we want to encourage them to connect, not discourage them from disconnecting. Let me tell you the difference. I can give you a really simple example. Say we've got somebody that's missed a few weeks of church. Two ways I can approach them. Way number one, I can go up and say, well, why weren't you here Sunday? And here's the problem. What have I automatically done? Defense. You owe me an explanation. Of course, I could also walk up to them and say, hey, I missed you Sunday. Do you see the subtle difference? It's an important difference. Because one demands that I give you an answer. The other one says, I noticed you weren't there, and I just want to know if everything is all right. See, one is a statement that you have a responsibility to be here. The other one is, hey, look, I have a responsibility to notice if you're not here. See the difference? very subtle. So we want to encourage people from disconnecting from the body, because these are the responsibilities, because just as the psalm that we sang, we're all in this together. And how do they know we are Christians? They know they're Christians because that's what it says on our sign out front, right? They know we're Christians because I have a cool t-shirt somewhere in my closet that says I am a Christian, or I am a C, I am a CH. You know how that song goes. But we have, you don't know how that song, we'll teach you that song next Kids Sunday, note to self. So they know I'm a Christian because, I read my Bible at lunchtime. That isn't what the song says. How do they know we're Christians? They look at the herd. Isn't that amazing? They look at the herd. They look at the people in the herd and they say, are you there for the people in the herd? Because guess what? They'll know we are Christians by the love that we have for one another, because we need to remember, the lion, he's out there prowling. Just like that little cartoon clip that we showed you right at the end, man, they're practicing. They're out there and they're looking for the disconnected. They're looking for the wanderer. They're looking for the one that just doesn't stay quite close enough to the herd that they can eventually figure out, there's one that I can target. Here's the deal. You need the herd, because Jesus said you needed the herd. This was his idea, not mine. Trust me, if you'd have asked me to come up with an idea on how to put people together, morning time would have not been it, okay, because I am not a morning person, okay? You would not have probably gotten that, well, you're supposed to put on a tie, you're supposed to, you wouldn't have gotten any of that, because that wasn't Jesus' idea. Jesus' idea was for a collection of people that had but one thing in common, their love for Christ. And you put all those people together and we become the herd, because we watch out for one another. And as we're watching out for one another, what did the song say? Hand in hand, we can join and we can go across the land, because as people see our connection, they're like, man, those people, they don't go through life alone. Those people, when their times are crying, man, look how the church rallied around them. I think I might need something like that in my life. And they begin to get curious and they begin to ask the questions, because you need the herd. But here's the other part. You need to understand, your herd needs you. I appreciate the fact that families took time this morning to break off from their normal worship routines to come and worship with us. But I want you to understand, your herd needs you, because there is somebody that's connected to your life, no matter how old or how young you are. There is somebody that is connected to you that you have a chance that when their faith begins to wander, you can have them take a step back in. See, that's the way this works. That lion, he isn't going to stop. He's going to keep prowling. He's going to keep roaring. He's going to keep devouring. And the only solution Jesus gave us was the herd.